Our presentation today, sponsored by Badger Talks, is titled, Will China Spark World War III? Our speaker today is Ed Friedman, Professor Emeritus of the College of Letters and Science in the Department of Political Science at UW-Madison. He received his PhD from Harvard. He studied in Taiwan and is fluent in Chinese. He's had a lot of experience in government service, and many of his works have been published throughout his career. Please help me welcome Ed.
Well, it's an honor to be here with you. As you all know, leaders in Washington and Beijing agree that their relations are getting worse and worse and could end up in war. The topic I think you'd like me to talk about is what Mr. Biden is doing to prevent that war and what you and I can do, but I'm not going to do that topic. Let's talk about first why China isn't an enemy. China is one of the most totalitarian tyrannies in the world. It's in the midst of carrying out genocide against Uyghurs and similar crimes against humanity, against Tibetans and Mongols. It's just destroyed the freedoms of Hong Kong. But sadly, all of these crimes do not make it its enemy. I don't have to tell you how many authoritarian governments there are, how many governments are our friends that do these kinds of bad things. They're not the cause of war. Maybe they should be, but they certainly are not the cause of war. It's also a fact that China is a tremendous economic challenge to the United States, not only to the United States, but to Europe, to Japan, to Korea, to much of the world. But that's a challenge. We could talk about the challenge, how it cheats, how it steals our technology, how it forces companies to turn over things, how it spies, all sorts of things like that. But that's a challenge. It's an economic challenge. And of course, you're going to respond to the economic challenge. But it's not a cause of war. It's not a cause of war. So what are the causes of the war? They begin very simply with China's desire, the People's Republic of China's desire, to dominate the Asian Pacific region. Now, all great powers, as they become great powers, try to do that. The United States did it in the Caribbean. You all know about gunboat diplomacy. But when the United States took the Caribbean back at that time, the great countries what? Haiti, Cuba, Dominican Republic, non-industrialized, weak pushovers. And the great power at the time was Britain. And Britain made its money by its dealing with the United States. So it didn't come to the help of the countries that the United States threatened, and the United States easily dominated these powers. Now, the thing is different for the People's Republic of China. It would like to dominate its region. By the way, India would like to dominate its region. Japan, before World War II, tried to dominate its region. Big powers do these things. They're not nice things, but all big powers do them. They don't always lead to war. Sometimes they do. When the People's Republic of China tries to dominate its region, it's not like the United States and the Caribbean. It faces Japan, the third largest economy in the world, an industrialized nation. South Korea, a very militarized, industrialized nation. Taiwan, the world's leader in sophisticated chips, 90% of them. There are other strong states in the region which are going to fight for their independence, Vietnam, Australia, India, and so on. None of them are going to just surrender to the PRC, and they all reach out to the United States for help. And as opposed to Britain and the Caribbean, the United States responds. Because even though China actually is America's largest trading partner, if you add up the trade now and in the future with Japan and South Korea and Taiwan and India and so on, they are our future, and we understand it as our future. And so, and they're also democracies mostly. We're coming to their aid. We're going to help them deter China. This is not like Britain and Haiti and Cuba and the Dominican Republic. So we have a very different world that's happening in the Indo-Pacific as opposed to what happened in the Caribbean. And the Chinese really are coming. Their view of the world is that there was a period of time when they were weak, which we can go into, and that's over. They're now going to be great. They should be great. They should be the center of the universe. That's their natural position in the world. Anybody who gets in the way of it has to be knocked out of the way of it. This is not just a communist view. Sun Yat-sen believed it when he was the first modern ruler of the Republic of China in 1912. Chiang Kai-shek believed it when he was an anti-communist leader. Mao believed it when he was the first leader. And Xi Jinping believes it today. They want to make China number one in the world. It is to them the essence of Chinese nationalism. And this makes it different than all the preceding leaders, they now have the wealth and power to do it. They can imagine themselves becoming the maritime leader of the Asian region. And they challenge Japan's Okinawa and Japan's Senkaku and Taiwan and Vietnam's Spratly and Paracel Islands and so on. They've taken over Vietnam's Paracel Islands. They killed 100 when they did it, 1988. And that is a day commemorated every year in Vietnam. They carry out missile exercises against Taiwan. They're very serious about that. This is for real. But of course, they really aren't copying the United States. They think they're copying the United States. They think they're doing what we did in the Caribbean, which was easy in comparison. But it's a different region. That's the key thing. It's a different region. It's not like the Caribbean. Japan, South Korea, Vietnam, India, Australia, they're faced with a set of different regions. So the question is, will they come to recognize that and back away? Or is it inconceivable that they will recognize it because they're so committed that that's what China should be? It should be number one in the world. I just want to argue that while war is more likely than it used to be, it certainly is not inevitable. And not only because the PRC could recognize the difference with regions. And as we all know, if we talk about Russia and Ukraine, you're hoping they're going to recognize what that means as a different kind of region. But I want to end up, because I'm going to make this short and then open it up to any questions you have, a reason which is not stressed enough in discussing a reason why, please God, we're not going to see a war. And that is, the PRC has real economic problems. If I pick out yesterday's New York Times, the headline says, "Youth unemployment crisis in China. One in five is out of work." One in five is out of work. The real answer would say at least one in five is out of work. That includes college graduates. Not only is one in five out of work, but firms are leaving China because they don't want to be dependent on it anymore. In addition to which, they can't fund their social welfare anymore. Their pensions, their social security, in the last year have been cut in half. Imagine if your social security were cut in half. In addition to that, smaller cities, without going to the details of how they used to fund themselves, can't fund themselves anymore. The Madisons of the PRC are going broke. It therefore has a debt crisis. And this debt crisis means all of these international investments it made, it can't really continue them. It's demanding that those countries pay back, which is not pleasant because that alienates these countries that they have been courting. And so the obvious truth is that the leader of the PRC, Xi Jinping, is compelled to focus more on economics than he is on the military stuff. Now, it doesn't make it impossible. Everybody says it makes it more likely that therefore he will distract people by going to war. I happen not to believe that. I think he's really concerned about what happens with the economy. Let me just sum it all up. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know the future. I think it is a fact that they really, really do in the PRC, the leaders, do believe that it is their destiny to be the number one nation in the world. Not only number one, but truly economically independent. They want everybody to need them so they can hurt you and you can't hurt them. And Japan, the US, the EU, they're all, and even India, are recognizing that and they're weakening their ties with China. Question is, what happens next? Hopefully, as I said, the PRC recognizes these realities and backs away from the war forces. And yet, the relations are not improving. By the way, Mr. Biden is trying to improve them because his people understand everything that I just said. But what it will add up to, I don't know. I just don't know. But I'd love to hear any of your thoughts on the topic, and I just start with that brief introduction. China is a member of the United Nations. It's a member of the Security Power Council. It has veto power. It tends not to like to vote alone with veto power and get singled out by the world, but that's beginning to happen. It likes Russia to do the voting so you don't pay attention to what China is voting. For a long period of time, the PRC would have thought that any question like that is clearly an anti-communist question whose goal is to overthrow the regime. And for a long time, they paid no attention to the climate issue. And then they did. And they went at it gung-ho. And now they are the biggest producer of wind energy in the world. They are the biggest producer of electronic energy in the world. They stole Germany's battery power. We get our batteries for electronic vehicles basically from China now. But at the same time, as I said, they want to be independent. They want to be independent. So wanting to be independent, their major source of power remains coal because they have a lot of coal. And then because they don't want to waste their coal, hope this doesn't shock anybody, but the West Virginia coal that Mr. Trump kept open, which has no market in the United States, sells to China. So depending which mood you're in, you can put together things that show the PRC is heading in a climate control direction, steals from everybody else that is in a climate control direction, doesn't care about the climate control because it really cares about its independence. All three positions can be rationally taken in describing parts of how the PRC works. And you'll find people who will only take one of the three and insist on you that that's the total truth. So first, something which may be obvious to everybody. Mr. Biden has broken one rule which the intelligence community doesn't like to break. We're very good at eavesdropping on other people's phones. And the intelligence community doesn't like it to be known. He likes it to be known. So we're aware of the answer to your question. He's made people aware. He told you that Russia was going to invade Ukraine before they did. By the way, that drives the intelligence community crazy. But he thought it might have the consequence of them not coming in. He didn't want to see the war happen. So you got to understand that they think of themselves as number one. They really don't think of themselves, of Russia, as a partner. They don't think of Russia as someone they look up to. If they look up to anyone in the world, I don't want to shock you, it's North Korea. Yes, the present leadership looks up to North Korea all the time. So the one thing that they have done is up to now, even though they had the economic power to dominate Central Asia, they let Russia dominate it. And they've now become convinced that Russia can't dominate it, that it's even weaker than they thought. It's even more dependent on the PRC than they thought. So the leader, Xi Jinping, has just come back from Central Asia, where he said to them, "My God, would you look what Putin is doing in Ukraine, what he did in Georgia? You don't want him to do that to you." They don't. But they were more afraid of China, because they know what China is doing in Tibet and Mongolia and to Uyghurs. And he said to them, "Well, now you may need us to make sure you keep your independence." So he's become, who asked the question about the West? So not seeking war, but seeking more power in the world, he's become more open to taking over the West too. And if you, to stick with your question now, if you look to the South, you could see them when Iran and Saudi Arabia were both becoming exhausted to the world economy is now in trouble and didn't want to continue their war in Yemen. They allowed China to help them stop fighting each other. So China has had more influence in the West too. So there's no doubt, you know, this vision that they have of they should be number one, they do have a view that they're winning on it. So your question is, but there's the Ukraine event. What impact does that have on it? There's no way in the world that they think they're as messed up as the Russians. So they're not going to say to themselves, "What do we learn from how Putin screwed up?" Because they will think that Putin's people screw up. And that's not us. That's not us. Well, it's two parts to your question. Let's do the second part first. And so, does that lead to war? I gave all the reasons I don't think it necessarily leads to war. I have no desire to change them. As for the population question, that's true. If you believe demographers' long-term projections, I don't know if I do or shouldn't, but if you believe demographers' long-term projections, by the end of this century, the United States will have close to 500,000 people, and the PRC will have less than 1 billion people, that the ratio will be less than 2 to 1. The ratio now is more than 4 to 1. So there is absolutely no doubt. If you want the fun part of the comparison, there are two reasons why the United States does better than most, three, in terms of these population issues. One is a higher percentage of women get child care, and it's not great, get child care and are able to do serious jobs. Second reason is that we have more, well, in the past, anyway, we've had more immigrant labor. And they come in not as children, but usually as people who are willing to work. Both of these things may or may not be disappearing. And so I don't know about the long range projections, but I can't see why this leads to war. They don't have enough workers, so you send your young men to fight so you'll have less workers. I don't know. I mean, there's too many people who jump and say whatever it is, it leads to war, and I apologize. But my feeling when I hear that is these are people who are just lobbying for more money for the Army, Navy, and Air Force. I'm a cynic on things like that. And by the way, I've worked for the Defense Department, and I found nothing that went in the way of what I just said. So I think Mr. Biden's doing a good job. What he realized, I think some of his advisors that he believed in at the beginning were not helpful on this, and he was heading in a direction of what is called decoupling our economic relations with China. He's changed directions on that. He now understands you want to have China keep seeing that there are reasons why they want good economic relations with the United States. Sure, you don't want them to steal your highest computer chips or what have you, but if you look around what you're wearing today, probably something of it is from the PRC and doesn't threaten anybody else in the world. So I think that Mr. Biden, who began, unfortunately, copying what Mr. Trump was doing on this, just treating them purely as enemy, not competitor, but enemy, made a mistake. But he's clearly changed, and I think he's going in the correct direction right now. Whether it will have an impact on the PRC, I don't know, because as I said, they are really committed to this notion of A, number one, B, don't want to be dependent on others, want others to be dependent on them so they could get even with them and hurt them if they disagree and so on. They've done this to many countries in the world now. So it's exactly as you say. We can't make sure what happens there, but you can do your best here. And I think at the moment, not at the start, but at the moment, Mr. Biden is doing the right thing. So I don't. I think the correct policy is the policy of helping people in trouble to deter, which is what we're doing, but you're absolutely right. There's a lot of people in power in the United States who want us to be number one and see it as a fight for number one. And I'm with you. It's a stupid view. Not for the reason you say. I think after the 1970s, when we let the dollar float, when the dollar was no longer strong enough as it was at the end of World War II to support the rest of the world economy, when Europe had risen, when Japan had risen, when OPEC began to rise, the notion of anyone being world dominant became an insane notion. But I think your point is correct that many people in power in the United States still have that view, and it's not a helpful view. I'm totally on your side. So, of course, they're interested in taking over. Taiwan is nothing like Hong Kong. Hong Kong was a British colony, and they put nothing in it. I mean, all the schools, other than the one school for gentlemen, University of Hong Kong, all the others were created by Hong Kong people themselves. It had only apparel kinds of stuff. It never got into the high-tech kind of stuff. Taiwan, as you correctly point out, produces 90% of the highest technology chips in the world. It is a totally different country. It is a very patriotic, independent place. It is what we call de facto independent. It is, in fact, an independent country, elects its own leaders, have to have an election right now, has its own foreign policy, its own military. That was never true about Hong Kong. It went from being a British colony to being part of the PRC empire. So the people are totally different, but the PRC desire of expanding and making itself number one certainly includes Taiwan. Taiwan had the benefit of 100 miles of water. Hong Kong was part of the PRC for the most part, except for Hong Kong Island. But most people lived in a place called Kowloon. My oldest daughter was born in Kowloon. I went to school in Taiwan. So I've lived in that part of the world. So yes, there's no doubt that they would love to take Taiwan, but 100 miles of water makes it more difficult. The present view is, if you care, if they were going to take it, they'd probably try a blockade to destroy its economy first and make people suffer, and then they'd do something else. So it isn't something where if you're planning war, you would expect a sudden strike. You'd expect quite the opposite. You'd expect them to use their economic and blockade power first. So that won't look anything like Hong Kong. Hong Kong didn't have an army. There was really no patriotism, no Hong Kong. It was the beginning of a growth of Hong Kong identity because they had their own movie pictures or what have you. Taiwan has a multi-century view of its own. Taiwan was never part of the People's Republic of China. In all its history, it was ruled from the mainland of Asia from around 1660 to 1680 and 1940 to 1949. Other than those two periods, Taiwan has never been ruled from the mainland of Asia. They have the largest military in the world. So before, let's say, before the People's Republic was established in 1949, the Republic of China and before that the Qing Dynasty were weak and poor in terms of global power. So they never did anything bad to Africa. So when they come to Africa after 1949, no one has anything against them. And the people who had been there had been imperial powers. And so they were very welcome. And they got away with the murder in many ways because they were not the British or the French or the Portuguese who were the major imperial powers. We were basically Liberia. But given the economic problems which I've just described to you, we're now watching for the first time China asking for money back. And of course, much of their deals were very corrupt deals. So they're talking to people who they have bought off and asking them to pay honestly. So relations are becoming somewhat complex inside of Africa. I don't know what the future means, because I don't know if they're going to get their economy straightened out or not. But they're seeing their first problems in Africa since that period, which you might think of as a post-imperial period. They didn't have an imperial background in Africa. They certainly had one all around Asia. I mean, if you were Vietnam, the essence of survival is being independent of China. Same thing for Korea, Kazakhstan, Mongolia, India, but not in Africa. Just you and me having this conversation, okay? It's a lot of racism in America. It's been here a while. And if the PRC is our enemy, a lot of that racism is going to be turned against people who look Chinese. By the way, most of them won't be Chinese, but who knows, right? So that's going to happen. The other part of it happening is the PRC tries to make those people loyal to them. And it makes them even more vulnerable than they'd have to be. Our racism makes them vulnerable enough. But their exploitation of people increases the vulnerability of those people. So it is, as you say, it's a very difficult situation. I have, in my time at the university, begged the university to think of our students as being people we protect. And it may be that some of them are spies, but the FBI's job is to catch them as spies, not ours. So this is a tough situation because it's going to be just as you said. I can't imagine that you will not see more anti-China racism given the two factors that are at work. Someone asked me a happy question. My eldest daughter was born in Hong Kong by a missionary doctor who was trained in Wisconsin. Margaret Krumpaker, I can remember, my daughter was born on Christmas Day and she had to give up Christmas dinner to that was a happy story about. What did I like about it? I think the first thing I noticed when I was a student that impressed me, that I didn't see in the United States, was little children taking pride in walking their grandparents across the street. And it was clear that age was treated very differently in Chinese culture than it was here. I think that was the first thing that actually, I can tell you a lot of things I didn't like, but you didn't ask me that. But I really liked that very, very much. Well, thank you all very, very much. Thank you. I appreciate it.